Hello, everyone, and welcome to our IME Office Hours call for the month of April 2019. And I'm super excited to have you here. It's a highlight of my month, getting together with practitioners and being able to support you in supporting people. And the more I have direct interactions with folks, you know, in large scale, like when we're doing a launch and have big webinars, I hear more and more things that get me passionate about what we're doing and why we're so needed. We need to get out there in full force. There's such misinformation being doled out by a lot of health practitioners who are well-meaning but not well-trained. And there's so much stuff that people are told to just ignore. And even recently hearing from one of our practitioners about the mistreatment that her parents got through the medical system with trauma, with emergency stuff, which I thought was, that's the stuff I always say that's the stuff we go there for. So we really need to be on guard. We really need to advocate for ourselves and for our clients and teach them how to advocate for themselves and teach them how to be the voice of reason. And when somebody says to you, well, of course diet and herbs have nothing to do with that, just take this drug, that they know enough about what's going on in their bodies to say no, except in life-threatening situations, obviously. An example, my son is in grad school, and he's away, right? And everybody around him is getting sick. He's been fighting it, and suddenly, you know, all of a sudden he's coughing and sneezing and has congestion. So I said, he's like, you know, asking me for advice. I said, remember the soup I used to make you when you were a kid? And every time you had any kind of cold or flu or whatever else started to come on, it always really helped. And I would make him this vegetable soup, which was cooked vegetables with the broth all blended up, and I'd put garlic and some oregano and basil and some of those antiviral herbs and give him tons of vitamin C. So he just wrote me back that he just made the big pot of soup. It was yummy. It was big. It was delicious. It was filling. And he's into counting calories and making sure he, you know, gets all his macros and micros, and it only ended up being 475 calories for the whole shebang. And he wrote me 3 potatoes, 4 cups of broccoli, 6 celery stalks, and then he added the spices and everything else. So it's pretty cool, you know. It's cool when we can teach our young people, especially because they're going to grow up to be our older generations, how to take care of themselves, but also those people who are already in the situations and already seeing us because they're not feeling well, because their energy is low, because they can't lose weight, because they're brain foggy, depressed, whatever. And I don't know how many of you made it to the live stream event we had, the workshop we had on Saturday, but we had like hundreds of people come and join me. I was in my kitchen. I was in my living room. I was teaching them stuff. I was demonstrating things. And one of our sweet spot solution students who came on really early on when we first started the program back in 2011 shared her story. And to hear her at age 74, when, you know, in her mid-60s, she had been told, just take all these medications, boatload of medications, hip surgeries, knee surgeries, et cetera, et cetera. And she wasn't going to lose weight because she was, you know, she was already in her 60s and her metabolism was set and her pituitary was shut down. Well, long story short, she lost 110 pounds. She feels amazing. She's 74. She's still working, teaching meditation, working in her husband's business. It's amazing. It's awesome how things can turn around. We just have to really stay the course and be with the people. And when they have those objections and when it's not working as fast as they want it to, cause why? They're used to taking drugs, right? Boom, instant symptom goes away, right? But it's getting buried. So I appreciate all the work that you do. And I just know that sometimes it can get frustrating when you're dealing with people and their doctor told them this and you told them that and they're concerned and they don't know who to believe. But it's really worth it. The rewards, the feeling of actually changing people's lives instead of just keeping them alive is glorious. So I just thought I'd get on my soapbox a little bit. A lot of you people are coming in, and I see that Gail submitted a question in advance. So I'm going to put, it says after events start, 34 seconds. Oh, she did it right at the beginning. So I'm going to take Gail's question, and then I'm going to go on to the hands that are up. There's a couple of hands up. All right. And Gail put it also in here. So the patient on elimination and low FODMAP diet, having started having respiratory symptoms, says her weak point, coughing up bright yellow sputum, history of respiratory for 6 weeks, best way to support her is it results of going too fast, went to MD, not pneumonia or flu, has swollen glands. So yeah, when it's yellow sputum rather than clear or white, it often is an indication of a viral thing. Now, a lot of times people have these latent viral infections that are living in their sinuses and their respiratory tract. And when they start to get healthier, right, their body now has the ability to expel it. So it doesn't mean that the process you're putting her through caused this, but it does sound infectious when it's yellow, bright yellow, especially when you say that. She had a history of a previous respiratory infection for 6 weeks. Was that recent? So the best way to support her. I don't know if it's the result of going too fast. I don't think so. I think you just basically need to help her support her immune system. And some of the stuff I just told my son is going to be helpful. So high dose vitamin C as high as she can tolerate it. The best one and the easiest on the bowels is the liposomal, but it's also the toughest one on the budget because it's expensive, but as much liposomal as she can afford and then fill in the gaps with a good buffered C. I like the one from Perk because it's low allergenic. It's not from corn. I think they extract it from potatoes. So Perk is the one I usually use for myself if I start to feel anything come on and use for my family. And the liposomal, I use Seeking Health's liposomal as well. So I would start with that. I would look at some of the herbs that support. So like I said to my son, making a big pot of blended soup with lots of good veggies and adding some oregano, basil, thyme. Those are very supportive of the immune system. Adding a lot of garlic, if she can tolerate it. I know on a low FODMAP, she may not be able to tolerate too much garlic, but garlic is super, super, super helpful for the support of the immune system and is an antiviral. So if she can tolerate garlic, fine. The other things would be, there's echinacea, there's berberine, and you're just going to have to, see what she tolerates. When you put somebody on low FODMAP, usually you want to do it for a short period of time. It's dose dependent. It doesn't mean, right, no FODMAP, because there's FODMAPs in just about everything, right? But how do you tolerate that? Like some of the things that are listed as eliminate on a low FODMAP diet, quite frankly, don't really cause a problem because the quantities that we tend to eat are just so small because they tend to be herbs. So I would play with those things. If she's into convenience, there's a really cool little thing that they sell at Whole Foods. It's called Kick-Ass Biotic, and it has a lot of these herbs in it. Getting on lots and lots of fluids, rest, sleep. So all the things that you would use for a respiratory infection. If she's coughing and it's uncomfortable, I would say slippery elm, although it's on the FODMAP list. But again, you use so little of it, can be very soothing for the throat. I also like Gaia. Is it Gaia that has it? No, it's Herb Farm that has a spray called Throat Coat, and it has a lot of these good herbs in it. So yeah, that's what I would do with her. And if you go back to our Vital community, if you're in our Vital community, I did a talk on this in January, which I still haven't posted the slides for. I have to get those slides together. You can listen to the talk that I did, and I talked about all of my favorite approaches for respiratory stuff, colds and flus. So that's what it is. I mean, maybe not the flu, which is great, but it's some sort of upper respiratory bug that she's eliminating. The other thing, if it's really heavy duty in her throat, in her chest, she feels like it's not eliminating. One of the things you can do is you can have her do mustard pack. So just look up mustard pack on Google and get the exact instructions. She can put a mustard pack on her chest, and that can be really helpful at eliminating it. But read the cautions about it because you just want to be real careful with it. The other thing that she could also do, what did I think about, was the mustard pack. So NAC, N-acetylcysteine, can be very helpful. because it, what it does is it thins out the mucus and helps people expel it better. So instead of being a thick mucus, it can be thinning and very easy to expel. So those are just some of the things. There's lots more if you want to listen to that vital call. All right. So let me go back to refresh this. And I'm going to go back to who's here. And there are a couple of questions. All right. So we have Lynn. I think you were just saying you heard me, but I'll open your line anyway in case you have anything to add. Lynn, was your hand up just because you were hearing me? Or because you have more to add?
Actually, I just had a couple of comments on what you were talking about before you went to the question. One, when my kids get sick, I make them what they call the firebomb juice, which is, you know, the parsley and cilantro and dandelions and celery and cucumber and all that, and garlic and ginger and all that stuff. So, in fact, when my oldest son was away on his mission and he didn't have a way to get a hold of me, he had somebody there call me and get the recipe so they could make it for him. So I was just relating to your son with the soup. But the other thing is I was talking with somebody the other day. They'd fallen, and in the process of checking things out, the CAT scan and whatever, they were told they had spinal stenosis and they needed to schedule surgery. And she's like, is there something else I can do besides surgery? And yeah, obviously. But one of the things is understanding, and this is a person who's in her 60s. So you teach about root cause. So they're finding this more and more with people who are older. And part of the issue is because we were raised with the free milk, right? That's when drinking milk, you know, was really started being pushed, and people needed to drink milk to have better bones and so forth. And so now they're finding people in our age bracket and older having these issues with their bones and kidney stones and so forth. And so understanding more about that root cause is just what you teach. And then create, and then you know to go and look at the inflammation, and no matter if it's showing up in your spine with spinal stenosis or in other areas. So that was all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you. Good job. All right. So next we have Michelle, and then we have somebody who looks like from overseas with a +44 number, so we'll go there. All right, let me get rid of Lynn's hand and Michelle. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hi. I have a client who, it's a child. She is 12 years old. A history for the past 5 years of seizures. I'm just doing my intake with the mom right now. Some of the things that I'm looking at are going to be, of course, the blood glucose issue. And she also has submitted her genetic panel to me. And I'm going to possibly suggest things like the oat. Are there any things in particular that I should be on a lookout for to assist this parent?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, you know, looking at the basics, like what are they feeding this kid, right? So a lot of the kids, you know, that, and the genetic tendency is likely there, but I would be looking and making sure there were like head injuries and traumas. I'm getting a good history on this as to have the seizures been there since she was small, or is it just recently started? So then you want to look at what were those factors that may have contributed to it more recently. The blood sugar definitely. And B vitamin status. So looking at the oat could be good at looking at the pathways. And you can also see the pathways for the mitochondria in there to see if there's some blocks there, and looking at the ketone status, right? Because we know that kids get very good results by putting them on a very strong therapeutic ketogenic diet with seizures.
Exactly.
Probably look at all the factors leading into it.
Well, that's why I was going to look into the blood glucose factor. Now, the thing is that I'm looking also into the emotional trauma aspect because she said the seizures started shortly after the grandmother passed and the child was very close to the grandmother. The other interesting thing is she's been dealing with this now for 5 years. Recently, in the past couple of months, she started to take CBD, and she's noticed that the seizure frequency has decreased, as well as the child seems more alert and more relaxed. And that's why I was going to look into that whole complex with the nervous system and, of course, the emotional trauma aspect. I also wanted to know, what was your take on the, well, to me, this whole thing with marijuana for everything kind of scenario.
No. It's the wonder drug.
Yeah.
You know, I think that definitely has merit. And I think that, you know, it's a crazy society where we make legal that somebody can go in and buy Tylenol over the counter and all sorts of drugs that have really serious effects on the liver and that they can get by prescription, some really serious heavy duty stuff. But the whole fact of marijuana has the stigma, right? It should be legal for at least prescription in every state because it has as many or way more therapeutic effects with way less side effects than most of the prescription drugs out there. So I know that there's good studies in anxiety and all. And if you go into the NEPT site, on the side, on the ACR, Advanced Clinical Resources, we had a call with a woman who does, she runs the Medical Cannabis Institute or something, and she did a really nice talk on the medical uses of it. So is it the wonder drug? No, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a wonder drug, a wonder food, a wonder diet. I mean, none of that. It's really, like you're doing, individualizing and looking at each individual person as what are the underlying factors, what are the antecedent factors that led up to it, what are the root causes, and how can you help to balance their system? And if CBD or THC or any of those things are an important factor in there, well, why not? I believe it's safer than Ritalin and Adderall and some of those other amphetamine type drugs, which are very addictive. And this has not been found to have physiologically addictive properties. Certainly in recreational drug users, there's an emotional and psychological addiction factor that goes into it. But I think that, you know, there's no such thing as a wonder drug. So let's just, you know, stop people from looking for that. But yes, it has a lot of therapeutic factors. And if she's got less seizures and her mood overall is better, then why not? It sounds like a good approach as part of a whole balanced the emotional, like you said, the diet, the lifestyle. And, you know, she had a real strong emotional attachment to her grandmother, you know, and lost her. That was 5 years ago, you said? 5 years ago. Yeah. I mean, it's trauma. I remember losing my grandparents when I was a kid, and it was hard. It was challenging. So all of those things play in, right? It's this cumulative thing that causes the bucket to overflow on top of probably some sort of genetic tendency towards, you know, blood, brain, electro problems. You know what I mean? And probably neurotransmitters as well. So all of those factors. Yeah. And I think you're on the right track with looking at the emotional and then also looking at the ODE test, because it really does give you a lot of information about those pathways. And looking at vitamin B12 as a possibility as well, because that's huge in all the neuro stuff. Yeah. And that will come out on the ODE test in terms of the methylmalonic acid that it tests.
Well, the other concern that I had with the CBD is that the daughter has previously been problematic with constipation, and CBD does have that interesting alliance because it's such a relaxant that it tends to make the bowels even more sluggish. So there's that aspect of it. But also now she's doing these different testing in terms of the neural pathways in the brain. And my concern is that we're not getting any kind of baseline, baseline, because we're overloading this stuff on there. So how can you even come up with a therapeutic plan that they're trying to create for the school that she's in when you're not really getting a true baseline.
Yeah, I mean, that's always to consider in anything, whenever we're intervening, whether it's with a drug, whether it's with a supplement, an herb, if you don't get a baseline, you don't really know where they're at. So on the one hand, you do get information about how this is working, but if they've never done a test before, you're right, we don't ever have a baseline. But on the other hand, seizures are, it's not like, I don't know, a tick, or it's not like, you know, a rash, where to get the numbers of seizures to come down is an important thing. And if you take it off of it, you run the risk of more frequent and more powerful seizures. It's much more dangerous than, you know, if her symptoms were something else that was more innocuous. So my concern would be if you try to take her off of that, and especially at 12, where puberty is starting and the hormones are starting.
Yeah, that's the other thing, that the puberty has started. And actually, I misspoke. It's not that the frequency of the seizures has decreased. It's just that she says her affect is more relaxed. The seizures have continued at the same frequency and everything. She hasn't seen any change with that.
Well, you can discuss your concern with the parent. Obviously, it's ultimately her decision. And just discuss and say, these are the downsides of keeping her on it. We won't ever get a true baseline. And if you take her off of it, you have to look at how long will it stay in the system before you can get a true baseline. And, you know, it may be that if her affect is different and she is a problem child, that it's hard to live with her with, you know what I'm saying? There's like ups and downs that the parents have to decide for her.
Would the puberty now also complicate the seizure aspect?
I mean, it could. Puberty complicates everything, but it has a serious effect on brain chemistry. We know that. Watch your kids as they go through puberty. They are like different children. They're Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. And it's really, I think it certainly can. I haven't looked specifically at the impacts of the shifting hormones on seizure activity, but you might do a Medline search to see if there's any studies or evidence that shows that. But logically speaking, when I look at what's going on, I would say, sure. I mean, I think puberty can affect everything.
But not to the extent that you would suggest doing a Dutch or anything like that.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't start there. I think you're on the right track with the oat.
Okay.
I think, you know, when we get too many tests at the same time, it clouds our perception. So if we find some imbalances, we start with what we think are the most important. And then we work from there and go, okay, we got some headway here, but we still need more. And maybe the puberty is affecting it. Let's go there. But the seizures predated puberty. So
exactly.
I would look at what kind of imbalances in the body, in the chemistry of the body, can have maybe been there since she was born, right? If she's got pathways that are blocked.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And now one other question on a more business front. I'm finishing up my book. I wanted to know, what would you suggest would be some of the better ways of putting it out?
Yeah. So there's a lot with this, and I could talk about this for hours, but it depends on whether you want it to be a physical book or just an ebook.
Both.
Both. Okay. So I would say, and you want to self-publish, obviously.
Yes. I've hooked up with Lulu Press.
With what's that? Google Press?
Lulu. L-U-L-U.
Oh, Lulu. Okay. I was going to suggest Amazon, because they have.
Yeah, they connect. They automatically connect with Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Nook and all of that.
Okay, good. So I would start with a Kindle. Because you can actually put your book up on Kindle before it's finished. You know, you're not putting the actual book up. You're just putting the whole thing. They give you 90 days to finish it. And you can actually start a bestseller campaign from there. I mean, ask everybody
you know. How to. I remember when we were at the Shine, you said that you were going to show us how to do that. Because I just did a book reading, and people are already asking me for pre-orders. And I remembered what you said with that 90-day Kindle thing where you can have people pre-order, but I didn't know how to actually go about doing it.
I don't remember the exact mechanisms because I'd have to go look it up in my notes at how to do it. But if you go to KDP Direct, Kindle, it's Kindle Publishing, KDP.
Okay.
And then they will give you the exact instructions. And they've changed it over time. But the instructions would be, the main thing you want to do is think about what category your book belongs in. Is it endocrinology? Is it immunology? Is it, you know, whatever the category might be. And start looking on Kindle. Like, look on the lists and see how many people, like, what are the best sellers in those. I'll see if I can find the notes that I have, but there's a specific way to look at how many books do you have to sell to make the best seller, to beat the top book in that category. Mm-hmm. And then you put it in the category. Like, I started my book in, I think it was endocrinology, because it was an easy, I think I had to sell 70 copies of my books, or 170 or something like that, to get it to be in the top, the top five in the category. And once you get that, you're going to get this little thing on Amazon puts and says bestseller. You take screenshots and you use that in your emails and you use that in your advertising. But yeah, this would be a really good PBSS, and I may actually do it at the retreat. We'll see if that happens. Because I think that it's a good thing. It's a very good thing for everybody to know about.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. Michelle. Okay. So then we have Chris in Jackson, Mississippi. So we have somebody, I think it's overseas, because that's what they usually look like with the numbers like that. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Rita Marie.
Hi. Yes, you are. I can tell by your accent that you are definitely from overseas. So who am I speaking to?
It's Lee here in the UK.
Oh, Lee. Okay, great.
How are you?
I'm good. It's it's a good time of day for you, right? It's evening.
Yeah, it is.
I was going to say it's late for you, but no, this is an early call. Yeah, so how can I help you today, Lee?
I have two questions. The first one is, I'm on about module 15, so I'm working my way through the digestive mastery, which I'm loving. A quick question. I have talked about this person before with gastritis. Although implementing your sort of suggestions with regards to bitters and things, I think the gastritis is definitely healing because it's not so sensitive in, you know, eating now. But something I was reading, to encourage the body to make its own HCL or certainly improve its ability to, I read about L-histidine. Is that something that you would advocate, given that obviously I know that the body needs its own time to heal, but whether or not that would actually be something you would suggest at any time?
It's a good point. And the first thought that came to mind was, be careful with people with histamine intolerance.
Right.
Okay. So that's it. Yeah. And I haven't seen any research on L-histidine and gastritis in particular, or an HCL. I'd have to look at that research and see how valid it is. My concern with somebody with gastritis is I would never want to give a person with gastritis HCL, first of all.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Cut the irritation. But you don't want to speed up the body's ability or artificially make the body make more than it's ready to make. So it's almost like trusting the natural wisdom of the body, and bitters are gentle support. But I'm happy if you have some research, if you could post it on the INE Facebook page, I would love to read up on that and see what I think. Like, I want to see what the mechanism is that it does that.
Okay. Actually, it was the doctor of the same surname as myself. It was Dr. Mark Russell Jaffe that actually talks about it. And I saw it on a short, he posted quite a lot on his website, and I was listening to it out of interest, because he was talking about pernicious anemia and things like that. And he's talking about the inability, obviously, to absorb magnesium, and obviously the B12 is a bit of an issue as well. And that's when he recommended it. And I thought, well, you know, you can try all sorts. And I didn't want to disrupt the body, because that was my one question. I think that many foods now, purely due to gut or leaky gut or permeated gut, is quite responsive, can eat almost anything, and then get sort of nose streaming, whereas that wasn't the issue before. So, you know, I know that there's an awful lot of time and things like that that are involved, but it was just if there was any gentle support, because my next question was, would it have the same as effect as HCL, something that obviously I wouldn't recommend, would it be I can't think of the right word, but acidic, you know, on the gastritis.
Yeah, you don't want to increase it too much while it's healing. So you want to be doing the gut healing to heal the lining, but it's really scary. You know, even with bitters, I tell people, you know, if somebody has a history of gastritis or ulcer, just go slow with that and watch, because it could aggravate. Same thing with enzymes that have proteolytic enzymes in them. You know, it's like we have to heal at a pace the body can tolerate. So yeah, I'm happy to look at that. I think anything that we can do to support people. But like you said, I'm concerned about the fact that she does have the gastritis, and flaring up gastritis is like, you know, that's so painful, and it's just you don't want to have them to have to go backwards for several weeks to get back up to where they were before you tried it.
Okay, no, that's fine. I think then that we'll just carry on slowly as we are. So that's one.
Yeah, and isolated amino acids, Shani, also. I'm a little concerned with isolated amino acids unless we've demonstrated that that person really, you know, truly needs it. So that's the other issue.
Okay. No, lovely. Thank you. Okay. And the other question was, I listened in to the sweet spot, which was absolutely amazing. Thank you. I've got two people that have come to mind that I'm just got a couple of questions for them. Now, given that I appreciate and understood where you came from with HbA1c readings, because interestingly, even though the fasting glucose came in higher, and I know that we're slightly different here in the UK, so it came in at 6.4, and our range is 3.5 to 6 mmol. So that did come in above.
Yeah, 6.4 is over 110. So 6.1 is 110. I know that because I just looked that up to tell somebody that. So 6.1 is 110. So if the fasting is 6.4, that's high. That's diagnosable as insulin resistance if we want to make a diagnosis.
Okay, because interestingly, the HbA1c, as I said, which I think I asked you about, somebody else about it before, their HbA1c, our range here is 22 to 42 and came in at 33, so bang in the middle, so it wouldn't have suggested there was a problem. But I very much go more on what they're describing as symptoms, and this person, or two people, but very similar, saying that they're feeling like a pulsation through their body. Now, when they've eaten, and when I say carbs, I mean eaten generally, even if they put protein with it, and get the brain fog and feel worse after, initially feel okay, but then maybe worse, maybe half an hour, 40 minutes later, and up to 2 hours later. But in your experience with the sugar, if they've got an immune thing going on, like histamine or anything else like that, could that create like a pulsing through the body? And when I say pulsing, you know, if you like hit a gong and then it went all the way through your body, you know, you can feel it vibrating.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one of the common symptoms, but it's certainly that feeling. Some people say it, I feel it if my sugar goes high. I feel it like a pulsing in my head. It's like, it's this weird sensation. So I think it can contribute to most anything. I think clearly if she has a 6.4 as a fasting insulin, she has a problem. I'm looking up the conversion table right now. The other thing I would say is sometimes we do have people with high fasting insulins and normal A1Cs, and that's sometimes it could be because they're athletic and there's a shift in how long it takes to recycle the red blood cells. But oftentimes it has to do with the fact that they have too much insulin and they're having swings. So this is where the postprandial glucose mapping comes into play, is like mapping that out so they see how high does it go, but then continuing the testing all the way, you know, at least to 3 or 4 hours, because that's when you start to see it go below where it starts. And so we see some HbA1cs normalize out when we have big swings, because they have the low and the high, and the average comes out to be more normal. So I'm looking up, let's see, you said 33.
Yeah.
So this chart doesn't even go that low. Holy cow, that's so weird. So Yeah.
Well, that's ours here. Our range is 22 to 42.
Yeah, we've got to find a chart that's the SI to US. I just did SI conversion. Conversion. Let's see. All right, convert between blah blah blah. Converter. Here we go. All right. Nope, that's not it. There's several of them out here. We just have to find the right one. HbA1c calculator. All right, so I'm going to just put in the 33 into what's the average hemoglobin. HbA1c in millimoles is 33. In millimoles here. Oh, you know, it's interesting because A1c is supposed to be a percentage, right? Hemoglobin A1c, it's a percentage. So it's interesting that there is a difference. Right? Mm-hmm. So that seems kind of odd. I can't get like, be able to conversion between percent to millimoles and vice versa. So if I put in millimoles, okay, 33, it's 5.2. So it's a little higher than I feel is ideal.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see it between 4.5 and 5, but it's not off the chart. So my suspicion is if you were to do a fasting insulin or postprandial insulin, if that comes out normal, that's going to be a little high, and that if you get her to MAP, she's going to find that she has highs and then lows.
Right. Okay. Which would then aggravate the immune, wouldn't it? The immune system, if it's compromised in any way as well.
Absolutely. You cannot compromise anything because of the inflammatory nature, et cetera, and all the dangers of high insulin. So I think insulin is one thing to test, but also getting her to get a glucose meter and start to look at her trends.
Okay. And with the, and I've just looked, her serum ALT is 19. And I remember on one call, I think you said 15 was your ideal, didn't you say?
Well, it depends if yours is the same range as ours, because ALT is fine up to 25. You know, like 10 to 25 is mine. The range that our labs in the U.S. allow for is up to 40 being normal, and I think that's too high.
Yeah, ours says 40. Under 40, it says.
Under 40, yeah. But I think 15 is fine. Yeah, 15 is fine.
But this is 19, so struggling with the liver.
Yeah. But what it also matters is the trends. Right? Mm. So it's not just like liver enzymes. You look at them, and if year after year they're increasing within the normal range, we know that there's some liver stress going on. And why do we want to wait till they get outside the normal range, right? Because then we run the risk of oxidative damage going on in the liver.
Yeah. So would the, going back to the KetoMojo, for the blood glucose and the ketones suffice, or do I need to do a specific insulin test?
No, you can get that. You can get her to go in and get the insulin tested if she can get her doctor to run that for her. And I would do that like fasting, first of all. But I think you're going to see more. You're going to see a lot when you have her do the glucose mapping.
Yeah. Okay. Lovely. And and from my perspective, just I understand obviously you've got the practitioner particular course on blood sugars, don't you? So,
yes.
But that covers an awful lot more than when an individual signs up for Sweet Spot. I appreciate that. But does it come? But is plenty learned on Sweet Spot alone for me to get an idea of how I'm working with these people or not?
I think you'll get a lot from it, and then and what we do is we actually include Sweet Spot when we offer it, and we're going to be offering the insulin resistance for practitioners in June with the extra calls, you know, the extra support and all, not just self-study. So what you could do is you could sign up for Sweet Spot now, and then when we offer it in June with the specials and all that kind of stuff, you can then upgrade to get into that practitioner training. That way, meanwhile, you've got 2 months to actually be doing the Sweet Spot and learning all that, and then you can upgrade into the practitioner training to have more depth. And then, you know, same way like you see with the CMDS, it's way more in-depth than just the grand program that we give the consumers. But it's a good starting point, and I think it would be great for you to start now. And then you can get a credit for it, you know, and we'll just give you your credit back towards the full price that we offer it for in June.
No, that sounds great, because I've just got so many people. I mean, I've, for all the time I've been practicing, I've always advocated a low GL and an alkaline diet. But I mean, I was only just skimming the surface. Now I'm understanding from the knowledge that I'm reading, you know, with you. So,
Is you can get you in early for that, and then you'll just be queued up to get all the live calls there, and you'll get access to the materials. You could talk to Lynn about that, and then you can actually be guiding your clients through it.
Yeah, and no, what I'm thinking is if I join Sweet Spot and then you say in June, then join and then sort of go into the practitioner one, then I can do the both anyway. So
exactly.
Lovely. Okay.
That'll be
thank easy. You very much.
Okay, brilliant. You're welcome. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Okay, so then we have Chris in Mississippi, Jackson. Hi, Chris.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Okay, I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
One is, okay, I have someone who, for some reason, they don't have their A1C number, but she's just gotten the, what's that basic glucose meter that they sell at Walmart that you recommend?
Oh, the Rely on Prime?
Yes. That.
Okay.
Anyway, she's been checked. Well, okay. At a doctor's appointment, they told her, you know, she's, you know, becoming insulin resistant. But, and I think her blood sugar was, her fasting was like 105. And now,
I'm just going to clarify because this is the misinformation they give. She's not becoming insulin resistant. She's actually diagnosable as insulin resistance within the medical system and has probably been developing this for a couple of decades. So I just want to clarify that this is really important clarification for people. So she is insulin resistant.
Yes, I agree. And so I recommended her get that Rely on Prime. And she's been using the glucometer and her fasting is really never below that 104. And it's usually around like 104, 109, all the way up to 114.
Oh.
And she's been implementing a whole lot of the things that I've been teaching her. But, I mean, I don't know. At this point, she says that she's done most everything she's willing to do as far as or that she can or is willing to do at this time as far as diet, sleep, stress, you know, the whole nine yards.
Right.
And I was wondering, is there like any point, I mean, like what fasting blood sugar would you say in her situation, if she's not going to do more than she's doing, should she be like still trying to stay like medication free at this point, or should she do the glucophage or metformin or whatever a little bit while she's still trying to dial in?
No, I mean, she's not at a point where, you know, they usually don't prescribe it until they're over 120, but they might. But here's the thing. It's an illusion. So if you look at berberine, right, for example, the studies on berberine show that it works more effectively than metformin. So if she's not willing to change much in terms of diet more or the exercise or all that, then looking at the supplements, like really digging into the supplements that we have in there, making sure that you play around with that to see if you can get it down. But the truth of the matter is, if she doesn't change her diet, whether she goes on metformin or not, she is right now every single day, every single waking moment, because that's her low, that's her fasting. She is damaging her retinas. She is damaging her peripheral nerves. She is damaging her kidneys. And she is damaging the blood vessel linings. So she is a heart attack, stroke, blindness, amputation waiting to happen. And she needs to understand this, that this is not a laughing matter. This is not a little skin rash. This is not a little stomach upset. This is her life. And, you know, you can ease her in gradually. But if she says, I'm done, I would give her all that, what I just gave you, and I'd say, I'd love to help you, but it's beyond my scope. I don't have a magic wand.
Okay, yeah.
Really saying, well, okay, thanks. Sometimes that's what they need to hear.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said that may sound mean and cruel, but sometimes that's what they need to hear. Now, if this
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this person related?
Well, I did tell her. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Is she a relative?
Okay. Well, I did tell her to order that chromium polynicotinate and the berberine.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she ever, I haven't seen her to see if she actually ordered it or not. But say if she does those, and I don't know. I mean, is there any, I mean, that, because that is, yeah, that's easy without her doing any other really change, you know, lifestyle-wise. Mm-hmm. If she adds those, and.
Don't forget the magnesium.
What would be dangerous?
What's that?
I'm sorry, what?
It's dangerous already. I'm just going to say it's dangerous already. And if she goes on the metformin, it's still dangerous because the metformin isn't going to cure her.
Okay.
Right. So it's dangerous already. It's been dangerous for probably 20 years. Okay. And a lot of people have strokes and heart attacks for no apparent reason other than this. Some people are developing retinopathies. We had a guy in our program. His fasting was in the 90s and they said, oh, it's nothing. And then he just, you know, not through his doctor, got an A1C done and it was 10. He's already got retinopathies. He already had the retinopathies, but nobody was looking for it. He already had the neuropathies, but his fasting was staying miraculously somewhere in the 90s. They didn't flag it. He's lost partial vision as a result because he didn't act. Right? So she's seems to understand all this, that the doctors don't have cures for diabetes. They have ways to manage the blood sugar, but you're still getting worse and worse and worse, and that's why all those complications. So unless she changes her lifestyle, it's not gonna help. And yes, you can start with getting some of those supplements into her, the chromium, the magnesium, the DHA, and in this particular case, I would say the berberine as well. There are other things that might be important as well, but go through the program and see what you can deliver. Small numbers at a time, take this. They want them, these people have to get out of this with that mentality, right? That they just have to take something and it's going to miraculously cure them.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm going to still steer her in that direction of doing all the things that, you know, I've learned from you. But I guess, I mean, is there any certain number that, I mean, should she try to still avoid, like, does all this, and at what point, I don't know, I mean, I feel like the doctor's office is like, you know, mentioned the going on medication, and I don't know, at what, is there a certain number that you would say, you know, if you tried all these other, I mean, that she should, or she should still avoid medication at all costs?
Well, no, I don't think it's avoid medication at all costs, especially metformin, because it can have some positive effects, right? And but it's deluding yourself to think that she could just eat her candy bars and take metformin and everything's going to be okay.
Right.
That's the danger that we run into. I just have to take my metformin. It keeps my fasting low. And we see people all the time that come in and they've been on metformin for years and their fastings are still in a dangerous range. Right. So certainly if her sugar starts to get up and her fasting is, you know, above 120, above 130, and she's not willing to do anything, it could certainly be beneficial maybe to take some metformin to keep it lower so that she's not getting a lot of those damages. But if she's making a lot of insulin, she's damaging herself left and right.
Yeah. And what do you make of this if, like, even after she said, you know, at Thanksgiving, she had to climb high. I mean, like, you know, the splurge and the highest it got ever, post, you know, post-eating was, like, 140. I mean, I know that's high, but is that, what would be the, you know, threshold of?
Okay, let me just tell you this. With the docs, right, you take somebody who's diabetic, they've been diagnosed. They think they're controlled. They consider it a controlled diabetic with an A1C of under 7. And as long as their 2-hour postprandial stays below 140, 140 or below, 2 hour postprandial. Okay. That's considered a controlled diabetic. That is not, in my opinion, and in the opinion of functional medicine docs around the world and people who really know this stuff, that's not controlled. There's still damage going on.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's great that it's only going to 40, right? But that's still 36 points above the baseline. And is that 2 hour postprandial? Was that a 45 minute? I mean, did she actually test it?
I'm not sure, but that does remind me of one other thing she said. She said, you know, sometimes she'll, you know, test it, do the finger prick, like, say, six times in a row, right in a row, and the results will be completely different. I don't know. I mean, does that mean there's something wrong with her meter, or, I mean,
well, you
know, again, like, she'll wait, like, 5 seconds and do it again?
Yeah, so it depends on what completely different means. Is it completely different in that it's, it's 20 points different, or it's within a 10-point range of being different? When I tested the meter,
it's even more than 10 points.
Yeah, so
I mean, some of them are more than 10 points. I don't know.
So it can be more than 10 points. Okay, so that's like, could be a flaky meter. But if it depends on when she's testing it, if she's just eaten, it's within that first, 15 to 30 minutes. It could be fluctuating up, down, as the body's trying to produce more insulin to get it down. Do you have A1C numbers or insulin numbers for her?
No, I don't.
A1C would be a good thing to test. And, of course, these doctors, that as soon as she's up in that range, they should be testing her A1C and insulin.
That's what I was thinking. I know.
So those are two things that she should get tested. So I would, maybe sit with the materials and see how can you present to her in such a way that it inspires her. Like, do you want to keep your feet? Do you want to keep your vision? Do you want to go on dialysis? Because these are the sequela, and it doesn't always happen. Like the retinopathies, they're seeing retinopathies in people when their sugar's barely above 100 fasting. And even in some, like in 7% of the people with the diabetic retinopathies, their fasting hasn't even hit 100 yet. And they're not getting super high. It's just damaging the retina.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is serious stuff.
Yeah, thanks.
And it bothers me because I see so many people suffering from this.
Right. Right. I know. It's sad.
I'll do
what you said. And my other thing is, supposedly the L-glutamine, I think that's what I read, is good for the gut healing.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the difference in, like, I read something by Dr. Russell Blaylock.
He's against it.
Retired neurosurgeon or something, talking about glutamine being an excitotoxin. I don't know. Is that a different form of glutamine?
Glutamine is not an excitotoxin. Glutamate is an excitotoxin. Glutamate. But in some folks, the glutamine can convert backwards into glutamate. Okay? And then especially in those folks that have specific genetic SNPs, GAD, glutamic acid decarboxylase, where they're not able to convert that glutamate into GABA, then taking glutamine for a leaky gut is not a good thing. So I've had people like that. I've had people get very anxious and excitable when they take glutamine. So we have to be very careful in prescribing it and go slow. You get powdered and you start with a little bit and a little bit more and a little bit more, and you explain to them what to look for. And if it works for them, great.
Okay, so you're looking for anxiety and just nervousness sort of?
Excitability,
If they don't have their genetic testing.
If they don't have their genetic testing, you're going very, very slow, and you're just looking for signs of excitability, right? Do they get ADD? Do they get hyperactive? Do they get anxious? Focus problems, homicidal, angry. Anything that changes from the baseline demeanor, then you're having too much, right? And you can back off.
Okay.
Like, some people put people on like a whole teaspoonful, which can be very helpful. But if they keep increasing and they get to a half teaspoon and then they start to have these symptoms, you can probably safely give them a quarter teaspoon, but still have them be watching that it isn't the buildup in the system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm asking about this one for like an eosinophilic esophagitis.
Oh,
diagnosis.
Yeah.
And so I'm figuring, you know, a lot of it stems from the gut and the food allergies. But
alcohol.
I don't know. The next thing.
Esophagitis.
Yeah, but there's no alcohol.
They don't do alcohol. Okay.
Yep. No, not never. So I don't know. This is actually my son. And am I even allowed to ask about my son? Or is this only for clients? I'm sorry. I don't know.
Is this son your client? Yes, you can. You're not allowed to ask about
Yeah.
All these calls, you can ask about anybody. On our client calls,
you're not allowed
to ask about your son. You're not allowed to ask about yourself. You're only allowed to ask about you know, clients. You're only allowed to ask about yourself on those calls. But on these calls, anybody's considered a client, including yourself, because you're learning. This is all about learning.
Okay, great. Thanks. Anyway, so he's never drank a drop of alcohol. He's been dealing with this for like 2 years. And, I've tried aloe. I've tried so many different things. And only thing I haven't done is slippery elm, which I should have done that a long time ago, I guess, tried that. But, the one time that he was going to have the EGD, like he had a food impaction and, they perforated his esophagus and was in hospital for 5 days. So it's a long story, but I'm scared to death to, you know, I quit going to that GI doctor because all he wanted to do was steroids and, you know, just recurrent, you know, a scope every 6 weeks and all that. So I've just been trying to help him control his diet as much as possible, but I don't have full control. I mean, he does live under my roof.
How old is he?
He just turned 18.
That's a tough age to be controlled. Right. But again, explaining to him the seriousness of this and tell him you want him to go on an elimination diet for 30 days to try to heal and heal.
Yeah.
Because you have to remove the fire. You know, we have to remove the source of the fire before you start to heal the underlying, right? You get put out the fire and then you do damage repair. And so it's being aggravated by things he's eating. So you're in IRSPT then, not CMDS, because there's a whole bunch of protocol stuff in there for, for the gut healing, for the esophagitis, for the reflux and all that. But he does need to heal that. You need to look at his stomach acid. Is he making enough? Because when you don't make enough, it makes the little valve loose, and then it allows the stomach contents to go up. You have to look at hiatal hernia. Does he have that? You can, you know, go to a chiropractor who specializes in kinesiology to be able to figure that out. You know, a lot of them can and be able to pull it down. You can look on YouTube. There are some videos that show how to actually adjust your own hiatal hernia. And I've had people do it and pull it back down, get stuck in the diaphragm, and then all the contents of the stomach spills into the esophagus, which the esophagus is not happy. But eosinophilic implies an allergy, an allergic type reaction. So there's a concentration of eosinophils in there. So you need to get rid of all those underlying causes. You would need to then heal the gut, heal the lining. You mentioned a few things. DGL has been found to be really helpful, especially if either powder and drink it down or a lozenge where it's just a slowly going down there and bathing the tissue in the esophagus. So those are some things that
Okay, what did you say that was? B12?
No, deglycerosinated licorice.
Okay. Oh, DGL. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Let me ask you this. This is what's weird. I mean, he was doing the elimination diet pretty well for a while, right after the hospital, you know, when he was all scared. He did do it, but he hated it, of course, because that's all they do at that age around here is go eat. And you know, it's just really hard lifestyle-wise, but he was doing pretty well. But this is what we've run into. He's kind of gotten more lax on that, but he still has difficulty swallowing. But the reason why he's so frustrated is because, well, he plays baseball and he, you know, he's all about, you know, calories and doesn't want to lose weight and all that. He's all into that. And he said if he eats the way I want him to eat, I mean, he's starving all the time. The thing is, too, his esophagus reacts to, like, avocado. It reacts to black beans, kidney beans, red beans, almonds. Like, he actually has, you know, I know that gluten and dairy and all that is probably long-term, you know, bad for his gut health and, you know, opening up the tight junctions or whatever. But acutely, the only thing he gets reactions from is healthy things. Like, oh, tomatoes, cucumber, grapes. I mean, all these other potential ways he could get calories, you know, eating healthy foods without gluten and dairy and soy and corn. You know, almost all of those foods he has a physical reaction to. And he's not just saying this because these are things that he used to eat all the time. These are foods he loved. Yeah. And, you know, and he's all worried about his vitamins, minerals, and his, I mean, you know, I don't know. And I don't know if I should try an elemental diet or what. But I mean, it's like he's just,
are there any higher fat foods that he can tolerate? Does he tolerate, like, coconut oil or any of the oils? Because, I mean, I'm not a big fan of oil, but therapeutically, he may need to, like, an elemental-type diet. I don't like any of the powders out there, by the way, but there are some good ones. Just playing around with some protein powder and some other things that you can put together. But you're going to have to put some oil in if he's an 18-year-old playing baseball and he's thin, you know. And so finding out.
Yeah.
You can get calories through, like, coconut oil, MCT oil, coconut is very soothing, flax, those sorts of things, hemp oil.
Yes. I have tried the MCT and the coconut oil, and that's been okay. I mean, he doesn't love the taste of the coconut oil, but the MCT,
you don't care about
the
drugs right now, and that he shouldn't either. Right? I really don't care about his taste buds. I care about healing that esophagus. He's 18. If this is allowed to go on, he is going to be very debilitated as he gets older and older. So it sounds like he's concerned, and he needs to be. So I would make a list of everything that he does that does not hurt him, right? That does not hurt going down, right? And then look at that, and you can have him make that list. And then you can go ahead and cross off the ones that you know are, you know, inflammatory and all that kind of stuff. And then you add to that, you create even a 4 or 5 day elimination diet. You get them on some of the slippery elm and the DGL. DGL has been shown to heal a lot of stuff within weeks.
Okay. So great.
You just get him to say, look, we're going to do this for 5 days and create a shake that you can have him make. You know, are there any protein powders? Are there any green powders? Anything like that?
I'm glad he said that. Is there a protein powder that you recommend? Like, he reacts to pea protein. He reacts to bone broth protein.
Sacha Inchi. Sacha Inchi. That's one my son loves. He's, you know, he's 25, but he's real into his weight and he's real into his body and his muscles. And he uses the Sacha Inchi and finds it very helpful. Okay.
Thank you.
And so you may have to just get a lot of little packets of the little sample sizes of things and try them and see if he can tolerate it. Because there's two things here. There's does it aggravate? We don't want anything that aggravates. We want to give him at least a 7 day period where nothing's going down that aggravates. Because then you can start to really heal it. And that combined with the slippery elm, the DGL can really be supportive.
Okay. That's great. Is the DGL, I guess you can get that in powder form, right?
You can get it in powder form. Someone has a powder form. There's a couple of others that have a powder form. You can get it as a lozenge. And sometimes the lozenges help with somebody with, you know, that they can just keep popping the lozenges down every time they feel it. And you can use it for acute problems. Like he ate something, he just had an avocado and ow, it hurts, right? Then he can take it to help to soothe it. You know, he can take, I would say slippery elm drink before every meal and then eat because it's going to help the code in line and give him some mucilaginous support there.
Okay, great. Thank
you.
Good luck.
I heard about you having kids is, you know, they don't always want to do what you want them to do, and you want to just make them well. You know, certainly fasting is not an option in an 18-year-old who's active and is worried about losing weight. So you really do need to look at how can you create a nice protein shake. If you didn't tolerate the bone broth, try, there's a new, I think they both have pea in it. Never mind. There's a couple of new ones that are out there that have some of the support. And Lynn, if you can pipe in with, I know that you or Drina had said on a call a couple of weeks ago that there was a collagen support herbal blend that could help to rebuild, especially with these guys who are concerned about their muscles. But that's where I would go with it. It's a hard road, but it's really curious as to why he developed this. And I would be looking at, like, what else, and is he not telling you that he drinks? You know, that's.
No, I know for sure that he doesn't, because, I mean, he just has never, I mean, he's just, you know, he has never. I mean, I know that for sure.
Okay. All right. But, just checking, because, you know, a teenager.
Believe me. Yeah, I understand. You know. I've asked him, but he's just a different child. I mean, he just doesn't, you know, do all that, you know, yet. Hopefully not ever, but, you know, but he just hasn't come into that. But what is the last thing that you said that I couldn't, I'm sorry, it was breaking up a little bit, but you said something about collagen, herbal.
Come on and tell you the name of it.
Yeah, it's the kind that I have. It's called the Plant Collagen Booster, and the brand name is Anima, A-N-I-M-A, Mundi, M-U-N-D-I. And I think, you know, I put the link to it in the chat.
Beautiful.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's things like horse tail and nettles and all that type of thing.
Yes,
okay,
you know, the
great
thing about it is that, you know, it's important to heal the lining, right, the mucous membrane lining, but also there's the structure underneath. And I think with the eosinophilic esophagitis, the damage goes deeper than just the surface. So that's where the collagen comes in to help to just keep the structure in place.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. This has been great. It's been more than I've learned in the past 2 years.
Okay. Oh, good.
Thank you.
Well, keep it coming. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure. I think that Angelica had put in a question in the chat, so in the Q&A, so let me go. My client is presenting with issues of hair falling out, difficulty gaining weight, and a host of digestive issues like bloating, gas, and bad breath. She suspects she has a parasite, but I want to try to address some of her upper GI issues doing a dysbiosis parasite assessment protocol. How long should I follow a basic upper GI healing like bitters, enzymes, and green drink protocols before we move into an intestinal repair? That's a great question, you know. So typically, you get that going. You typically want to also, you know, in the upper GI repair, when you look in CMDS and the way we present it, it's the pre-meal ritual, the eating slowly, the getting out of sympathetic and into parasympathetic, and all those sorts of things. But I would say you can start that and do that for a week or two just to get her established, just to keep her from being overwhelmed, and then you can look at starting some sort of intestinal repair dysbiosis protocol. The difficulty gaining weight, very classic with a parasite, right? Hair falling out, oftentimes due to mineral imbalances or hormonal imbalances, but that could be as a result of not getting it. But of course, you want to look at her food intake, and you want to get her on a food intake that's clean and, you know, that isn't full of gut irritants, right? So that's my first step in anything, is remove the gut irritants and then start to add back in the foods that support and heal. And then once you get her going with that and she's not going to be overwhelmed, then you can get into the gut repair and dysbiosis protocol. Good question. One more. I think that Lee had her hand up again. Yes. Hi, Lee.
Hello again. Sorry, I forgot something earlier. I just wanted to ask, I had put a question into the group chat, actually, on Facebook. Someone struggling with thiols, I know that molybdenum, actually, I think you'd said also before, maybe it may help break down on that sulfur route, but obviously there's something key to methylation and sulfation route going on here. Is there a difference, or what is the difference, may I ask, between the molybdenum in either, is it glycinate, chelate, or the other derivative is sodium? And I don't know if, like in, for example, with the methylation, cannot take anything that's got a methyl, like methylfolate or methylcobalamin or whatever. So same person, would they struggle with either one of these particularly?
No, I don't think so. I think with the methylation, the methyl is because of some other pathways that are blocked, and too many methyl groups can cause a backup and cause the anxiety, et cetera. But I don't think there's an issue here. It's a matter of which one would they tolerate better. And also consider, especially if it's in the same person with the gastritis, consider the liquid molybdenum, an ionic liquid molybdenum.
Yeah, we can get two in the UK. I can get either Seeking Health or another one, which is called Epigenetics. And but one's, as I say, sodium molybdenate, and the other one's a glycinate chelate. And I thought, I don't know. I didn't want it to have, any impact on the methylation process.
No, I don't think it will affect your methylation per se. Okay. Nothing that I can think of off the top of my head. And I think, you know, like you look at zinc citrate, zinc picolinate, zinc glycinate. I mean, there's also different forms of carriers. And it just depends on the person which one they tolerate better. But I think that if you can get the liquid ionic, check in with, you're in the UK, check in with Metabolics. They have a lot of liquid nutrients, and see if they have a liquid molybdenum.
That's
a lot of the big, because the body, when you take in a mineral, it's bound to a substance, a carrier. That's what the glycinate is, or the chelate, whatever, chelate. And it's bound, and then you have to go through the digestive process, and in the small intestine, that's where they are cleaved apart, and then you can absorb it. And it starts with good stomach acid. So if this person has gastritis and she has low stomach acid, she may not be breaking the minerals off their binder as well. If you take an ionic form, it's already in the form that even if she were to just take it on an empty stomach, you know, 5 minutes before her meal, it could actually pass through the wall of the stomach. So it bypasses a lot of the intestinal overhead that's required. So as much as possible, I like to see people get liquid minerals.
That makes sense. And both of these are liquid. It was just the form in which they came. So,
both
in other words,
really? Yeah. Usually the liquids are ionic. Okay. So, I would try it and see which one she works better with, if there's a difference or not.
Okay, because super, super sensitive takes 5 mil of the liposomal C, on an empty stomach, and can only tolerate that really 2 days, and on the third day, again, it's brain fog city.
Yeah, then don't do it on an empty stomach. Have it with a little bit of something.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So the molybdenum from Metabolics is ionic, and I did put the link in the chat.
Is the one from Seeking Health, is it ionic, or is it just a liquid form of a chelated? Because it doesn't sound like it's ionic if it's got those carriers.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry, I'm thinking liquid form, but you're saying ionic. Okay.
Well, ionic, yeah.
Different.
Ionic.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Lovely.
Okay. Okay.
And
I will check that.
Tolerate, because if somebody has gastritis and they don't tolerate things, or esophagitis or anything that's inflamed, and they don't tolerate things on an empty stomach, they need something with it, you can always take it with a little bit of something, right? Just as to help it along. Yes, it won't be as well absorbed as if you took it on an empty stomach, but you've always got to have balance the trade-off when we're working with people.
And in answer to that, the previous lady with her son, DMG, marshmallow, and slippery elm massively, massively helped the gastritis all down the esophagus and the small intestine.
You're all together. Did you put all three of them at the same time in her protocol, or did you do one and then another and then another?
No, actually got it mixed by a professional herbalist who we trust here, and as a kinesiologist we muscle tested them as well, and all three were really, really good. So, they worked perfectly, and we did them 10 minutes before a meal.
Okay, so, and did you see them, is it a powdered form that they put together for you? Beautiful.
Yeah.
And you can easily get powdered marshmallow, powdered slippery elm, powdered GGL, put it together, but, you know, it's your kid. Get all three of them and then just play with it. Like, be the mad scientist and play with the dosage and the proportion. So, yeah, good idea. Thank you for that. That's good to know.
Yeah, no, lovely. Okay, thank you.
Super. Thank you.
Bye-bye again.
I'm going to look back and see if there's anybody else that put in anything in the questions. Nope. And then I don't see any more hands. Anybody else have questions? Raise your hand. Star 2. All right, let me just put in some links. Oops. There's the metabolics. And there's is it a liposomal? Liposomal is another way to go. If you can find them, most of the minerals I don't see in liposomal form. Let's see. I'm looking at the optimal one, a molybdenum from. I don't think the one from Seeking Help is actually, but liquid is going to be absorbed better than capsules anyway, but I don't think it's as much. All right, guys. Let's see, anything else? Star 2, Janet. Star 2, not star 3. All right, let me see. Let's see, if I see you on there, I'll open up your line. Janet. Nope, I don't see you there. I don't see you there, Janet. Who else? You're the 4-4. Okay, great. I think most of this. Cool. Awesome, Angelica. You're getting started tonight. Beautiful. Yay. I'm excited for you. There's Chris again. Hi, Chris.
Hey, I'm so sorry. I just remembered one other thing I was going to ask you.
Sure.
About my son with the eosinophilic esophagitis.
Yep.
Okay. You know, right now, with all the, we're in Mississippi, so it's environmental allergies galore around here. And anyway, it's this time of year, almost 2 years ago, when he had that major impaction. And anyway, I finally found someone, like an alternative type of doctor. I mean, he's not super like what I would like to find, but anyway, I found the most alternative person around here. And he has an appointment on Thursday. And this doctor had already told me that he wants to get him going on these inhalable steroids. Just at first, he assured me it would not be something he was on long term or anything. But do you think, I mean, should I try to avoid him giving that to my son? I mean, just even if it's a short term.
Yeah, so it depends on the situation and how severe it is, Chris. I mean, you don't want him to erode the lining, you know, that through the whole esophagus at age 18. So sometimes we need to jump in with a treatment as long as it's short term. I'm just looking at some stuff up on eosinophilic esophagitis. Food allergy is a huge reaction, as is acid reflux, which we talked about. 50% have seasonal allergies and asthma. So it sounds like, has he always had seasonal allergies?
No, it's weird. It's just, I mean, it really just started 2 years ago. I mean, he's never had asthma or asthma attacks at all. And he's played sports all his life. And he's really never had any pollen problems or anything until April of 2017.
So what was happening around then? Like, what happened right before that, during that, emotionally, environmentally, travel? What kind of stuff did he do 6 months before that?
I mean, he definitely, I don't know. I hate that, like, it sounds kind of superficial, but, I mean, he was under a lot of stress. I mean, a lot of, he was, you know, I mean, kind of was thrown in a shortstop as a ninth grader, and he had made several errors, and, you know, and it's just kind of like he was feeling the, you know, just feeling the, you know, burden for the whole team. They come, you know, he felt like, you know, it's his fault. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like in high school, and, you know, how people might say things and stuff like that, you know, I think he was just dealing with a lot of stress with that, plus keeping up his grades and just, you know, I don't know. I mean, that is definitely not only the time of year, but all the pollen down here and then just kind of being thrown into that position as a freshman.
What was the impaction thing, though? You mentioned that twice, the impaction. What happened with that?
And so what happened with that, it was, he had just started, like, 2 weeks before that, started having, you know, just, like, a lot of, you know, blowing his nose, just environmental type of, just regular allergies. So I got him some loratadine tablets that was really small, you know, I just gave one to him. I was sort of giving him one every morning before school just to get him through the season. And until this, I had not even really, he had sort of mentioned that he had difficulty swallowing, but it wasn't anything that you would notice without him saying, you know,
yeah.
I didn't pay that much attention to it. And this particular day, he was actually out. I mean, we were out of these, little small tablets, and I gave him just, you know, one of my other, you know, my husband has some other allergy pill that was larger. And anyway, it just got impacted. It's like, it was just like he went on to school, but he said, you know, felt like there was a wall was in his esophagus, and they tried to get it out, and then they were going to stretch it after they got it out. But anyway, that's when he started leaking air into his tissues and had to be put on a ventilator, and his lung collapsed. And, you know, it was just like that was, you know, just a whole fiasco. But nothing had ever really, he had never had any problems health-wise until then. And actually now I'm pretty worried because he's had like a couple of migraines, which he had never had since then. And he actually had one of those aura things where he couldn't even see out of like the white side of his right eye. It was all black. Like when you looked at the TV, it was dark in that one corner. And he's told me he felt dizzy a couple of times, but that has come and gone. I mean, you know, I don't know, but I feel like, you know, his immune system is just really out of whack or something, you know, I don't know. And I've never even had his allergies tested because I've just kind of gotten to where I don't trust. I mean, there's nobody here that's out of the conventional mindset. Nobody that I've really noticed. And then I don't know, you know, as far as the allergy testing, you know, you always hear about the false positives and negatives and everything. And so I just, that's why I've been trying to do the elimination diet. But, you know,
so
of course,
when
gluten,
right?
And dairy don't seem to bother him and everything else does, he gets, you know.
Well, you can do a simple test on the gluten by going to Intero Labs. It's a poop test, and see if it shows up that way. Those are pretty accurate.
Right.
Here's the thing, though, right? So those may not be showing up as hurting him when he eats, but those could be an underlying cause of mucus formation and triggering allergies, right?
Yeah.
So if you've done full blood work on him and looked at his white blood cell counts and looking at the eosinophil counts, I mean, there's a lot of stuff here. I mean, it sounds like this is something where you need to take him start to finish through balancing his entire body, like what goes on, because it seems like the whole esophagus thing might have been going on before this or might not have. But it might have been, you know, when they looked at it and they saw it, did they see erosions or problems in the upper part of the throat, or did they just go in there to pull it out and not scope them?
Well, they did end up, like, taking some biopsies, and that's when they said he did have the eosinophils. course, they didn't even tell me how many I had to call the hospital in front of my house. It was like 15 eosinophils, which isn't that many. It compares to a lot of people, but you know, they did officially do that. And wait, what else was your question? I'm sorry.
They scoped.
Oh, yeah, there was a stricture.
Where was it stuck? Was it up closer to his throat, or was it closer down towards the stomach, or somewhere in between?
I think it was a little bit farther down, thank goodness. And that's why he was able to go on to school that day. You know, he kind of didn't realize, neither one of us realized exactly, you know, he was just trying to, I don't know, like he thought it would just kind of, the feeling would go away. But I think if it was farther up, it would have really affected him more.
Yeah,
so in terms of
breathing. Right. Okay. Yeah, so just asking if they scoped the entire length, does he have some issues up closer to the throat, which would contribute to the difficulty swallowing? Washing urine a lot more than we can handle, but I think somebody who really is good at functional medicine, even if it's not locally, you know, somebody remotely,
yeah,
by setting up a session with one of our, you know, more advanced coaches that could really walk through and try to understand all of the things that are involved with it. If you want, reach out to Lynn and she can help you with that. But I would say
sure. You
need somebody who's going to do a thorough history and put it all together, not somebody who's preconceived, like, oh, we have to put him on steroids and then. Maybe the steroids are needed at this point. It depends on how badly he's functioning. I've asked you a lot of questions, but I still don't feel like I have a complete enough picture to be able to – you know, understand the full thing.
Okay. I know it's a lot to it, but I am going to get started on all the things we talked about today, and
okay,
hopefully,
and you know, we're not about medication, avoid medication at all costs. Sometimes it's, you know, in a situation where things are either life threatening or threatening severe permanent damage, because if he ends up with scar tissue forming as a result of not getting the inflammation under control, then he's going to have thickening throughout his esophagus, and he's going to have difficulty swallowing, you know, long term. That really isn't
reversible.
So that you really have to weigh those things out.
Right. I think I'll let him do the steroids for short term, as we try to dial in all these
try to dial in the root cause and really fix the root cause. And he's going to have to change some things in his diet, because I think, you know, the common allergens, the gluten, the dairy, the, you know, some of the other grains, and sugar is certainly a biggie.
Yeah. Do you have any idea why it would be that all these, I mean, I didn't know if it was, I mean, did those things make any sense? Like if you put together like cucumbers, the tomatoes.
The tomatoes do, because they're acidic. The cucumbers, possibly. The avocado is a little bit of a mystery, because it seems to be very soothing and healing in that, but there may be something that he's sensitive to. Yeah, again, I don't have enough of the history to really go into more detail, but we're running out of time. We're at the end of our call. So, I think it was a good learning opportunity for everybody listening to your call, listening to your story and the kinds of questions that we went through, but it's more than we can really delve into right now. I mean, I usually spend like an hour and a half taking a history on people after they've filled out their forms. So, Lynn, did you have something you wanted to add?
Well, what did you say about...
So avocados can be a histamine reaction. What came up for me. And, you know, the other thing is, so you have access to both IRSPT and CMDS.
I was going to say that earlier, but I didn't really want to interrupt. But I haven't started the digestive one.
Well, now's a good time, girl.
Yeah, exactly. I am.
You got to become the expert on the digestive tract, because you're living in an area where you don't have experts, and you want to be able to ask the right questions and show that you're knowledgeable. But thank you about that for avocado, because I was thinking about histamine earlier, and in terms of vitamin C, get them on some liposomal vitamin C. I think anything other than liposomal is going to irritate his esophagus, so liposomal C. And then quercetin.
And nettles.
And nettles, yeah.
Because tomatoes are histamine. cucumbers, try taking the seeds out because that's where the lectins are.
Yeah, it's a little bit of lectin too. Yeah, with the beans and
that.
Like, so it's kind of, I feel like it's almost every.
So the
eliminate of everything.
Juicing with protein powders can be your friend. Juicing protein powders with some of the good oils, the omega-3 oils, to try to get him on a real serious elimination for a bit. But liposomal, I think you can get liposomal quercetin. Not sure. I know you can get liposomal C. Nettle, you can make a nettle tea. So hopefully that is very, very calming and soothing. And then the other thing I was going to say is liposomal turmeric might be good.
Oh, I have tried that. I mean, you know, I don't know that it did or didn't work. I mean, we just took one bottle. I didn't see a ton of difference, but I need to make it do it everything at once and just.
Yeah. It's combined. You've got a lot of things to start with here for soothing, getting the inflammation down, getting the histamines down, and moving from there. But Lynn, if you want to reach out to Lynn and see if she can set you up with, you know, say, I was thinking Lisa, because Lisa is really, you know, knows how to get in depth with these things, or, you know, somebody else that has that experience. Like, I'm not thinking of anybody off the top of my head, like maybe Drina. I think she's traveling. So anyway, thank you.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
All right. We're at the end of our time together. I don't see any more questions and I've got to go to my next call. But good. I mean, we learned a lot here, didn't we? There's a lot here to explore, and I'm just going to open up your lines and we can say goodbye to each other. If you missed any of it, the recording will be posted. You can come back to the same link any time within the next 24 hours, and then after that, she'll move it onto the site, hopefully by Wednesday or Thursday. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Thank you.